Sermon title is For Losers and Cowards. You know what a loser is, don't you? A loser is a woodpecker in a petrified forest. A loser is a guy who sticks his hand out to make a left turn and smacks a traffic cop in the face. A loser is a gal who plays hide and seek and nobody goes to look for her. That's what Gideon was. He was a real loser before he teamed up with God. This story from the book of Judges is a lesson for all losers, all little people, all those who feel they're too timid to ever be brave, all insignificant people, all fearful people, all defeated people, for all who discount themselves and either have given up completely or are about ready to throw in the towel. Gideon is so much like us that his story sounds like some poor character in a best-selling paperback. The nation of Israel has done wickedly. They've turned from worshiping God to idol worship. And as a result, God has allowed them for 7 years to be harassed by their enemies. These enemies included the Midianites, the Amalekites, and other people of the east. Every time Israel plants a crop, these enemies come in and plunder and destroy it. The enemy has camels, and they run so fast, are so powerful, that the poor Israelites don't stand a chance. So the people are reduced to abject poverty. They hide in caves. They cower when the Midianites' hordes descend upon them, and finally they cry out to God for help. And when we first see Gideon in Judges chapter 6, he's hiding in a cave, hoping the Midianites won't find him. Most of the crops have been plundered and destroyed, but what he has managed to save must now be winnowed. So Gideon is in a cave threshing wheat in a wine press, trying to get enough grain for flour. He's doing this job in the worst possible way. To winnow wheat, you need to be out in the open air where the wind can blow the chaff away as the grain is tossed upward, leaving the wheat berries. But he's scared to be seen out in open, so he's doing the best job he can in hiding. Then, one moment, probably when he stops long enough to wipe the dust out of his eyes and the sweat from his brow, he glances over the way into the distance and sees, of all things, an angel sitting under an oak tree. And the angel speaks and says, "The Lord is with you, thou mighty man of valor." Now, here's an angel with an odd sense of humor. It doesn't look like God is even close to helping Gideon with his presence. And to call him a man of valor is ridiculous. Gideon knows he isn't brave. In fact, he's frightened half out of his wits. And God says further through the angel, "Go save your people." And Gideon's response is what you might expect under the circumstances. "Who, me? How? Why? My family is the poorest of the tribe, and I'm the weakest and the least of the family." "But," the Lord said, "I will be with you." That's probably the best news Gideon has heard in something like 7 years. And Gideon said, "Oh, yeah? Prove it." But first, stay here and I'll go get you something to eat. You see, at least he didn't forget his manners. And he went home and he fixed a meal for his visitor. Roast young goat, broth and bread. And he gave it to the angel, still sitting under the oak tree, who told him to put it on a rock. And it was suddenly and miraculously consumed by fire. And then the angel disappeared. Then it dawned on Gideon that he really had been talking to God, and he's not sure, but they might die from that experience. And God says again, "Gideon, you won't die, but here's what I want you to do. Start restoring true worship to the land. Tear down the altar of Baal. Cut down the wooden idol of the goddess Asherah. Replace Baal's altar with an altar to me. Put an ox on it as a sacrifice, and use the wooden idol you destroy to make the wood on the fire for the God's altar." And Gideon did that. Doesn't Gideon's lack of confidence in himself remind you of us? Some of you may be very certain and sure of yourself. You have no fears, no insecurities, no feelings of inferiority. But if so, you're in the minority. Most of us, if we know ourselves at all, admit that we don't have much self-confidence. We're not even sure we would be missed by many people if we moved or died. There was a man who patronized a certain service station. A boy named George occasionally checked his oil and washed his windshield and filled his gas tank. And one day, the motorist stopped for gas and didn't see George. And the next time he stopped at the station, George wasn't there, nor the third time. So he asked the manager, "Where's George?" And the manager replied, "Well, George doesn't work here anymore." And the customer said, "Well, who's going to fill his vacancy?" And the manager replied, "George didn't leave any vacancy." Isn't that a pretty good picture of us? Who would miss us if we didn't show up for work or for church or for a party we're invited to? Who are we after all? There's always someone richer or younger or smarter or stronger or prettier than we are. A man went to his psychologist because he suffered from an inferiority complex. "Help me," he said to the doctor. And after a long series of tests and treatments, the psychologist reported to his patient, "I have good news for you. You don't have a complex. You really are inferior." Yes, Gideon's feelings are as modern as today's humanity. He said, "I'm the weakest in my family, and my family is the poorest in the tribe." Like us, Gideon had little confidence in himself, but also he didn't have much faith in God. One day after the angel's visit with Gideon, the Midianites and Amalekites and the other enemy nations gathered together, preparing for an all-out attack on Israel. And God told Gideon that he was to deliver his people. Gideon told God, "If you really mean to use me, prove it. I've got to have another sign. Tonight I'll put some wool on the threshing floor, and in the morning let the fleece be wet and the floor around it be dry." Sure enough, the next morning God had confirmed it by doing just as Gideon had asked. But Gideon wanted to be absolutely sure. God has already visited him with an angel. that talks to him and consumes food miraculously with fire on a rock, has helped him to destroy the altars of Baal and Asherah, and has made the fleece wet and the floor dry all around it. But still, Gideon wants more proof. So Gideon says, "Now, God, don't get mad, but let's do it just one more time. Only this time the other way around. In the morning, let the fleece be dry and the floor around it be wet." And God did that for him, too. Gideon's lack of faith in God has become a popular way of proving something, even today. When we want to test something to the limit, we say we put out a fleece. Doesn't Gideon's lack of faith in God look familiar? God puts thousands of promises for us in the Bible, and we're not sure he means to keep them. God promises if we ask, we shall receive when we pray, but we doubt him most of the time. God has never, not even one time, failed us, but we keep expecting it to happen. Oral Roberts once said, "Something good is going to happen to you." And we respond fearfully by saying, "Well, I hope so." He also said, "Expect a miracle." And we, like Gideon, say, "Who, me? Prove it." And this loser named Gideon had still another problem. He didn't have much human help. Now, at least more convinced than he was, Gideon gets an army together to fight the Midianites. God has showed him the miracles. The enemy is preparing an attack, and Gideon gathers some 32,000 soldiers to fight the battle. But God said, "That's too many men, Gideon. You'll think you won the battle all by yourself. So send the scared ones home." And 22,000 of them left, leaving only 10,000 to fight. And God said, "That's still too many. I'll sort them out for you." So down by the river, God thinned out the ranks till Gideon wound up with only a pitiful small army of 300 men to do battle with the vast armies of the Midianites. Not much human help, is there? If Gideon is depending on manpower alone, he's doomed to failure. 300 men is almost no army at all. There will be a lot of times in your life when, like Gideon, you'll feel you have little human aid. You'll be a minority. Your friends won't always understand you. You may live with thousands of acquaintances and friends, but when the going gets hard, when the battle is rough, you'll probably be able to count on your fingers of one hand those who will really stand by you. An elderly lady in Florida said, "When my sister died, the last person on earth who cared about me was gone. I don't even have one name to put on the blank space on my identification card to notify in case of an emergency." But however small your human helpers and resources are, my friends, remember that God always gives you somebody. When Gideon and his band of 300 men started to fight the hordes of the Midianites, they realized they didn't have any real weapons of warfare. All they had were trumpets, clay jars, torches, and shouts. But the sounding of the trumpets, the breaking of the pitchers, the blazing of the torches, and the shouting of the men frightened the enemy halfway out of their wits, and they ran, terrified, stumbling over one another and killing each other as they fled. That day, with such puny resources of their own, Gideon and his men won the battle for the nation and for God. Haven't you noticed how paltry our resources often are? Moses had only a rod. The little boy had only 5 loaves and 2 fishes. But it was enough. A little is a lot in God's hands. You feel you can't teach too well or sing too well, and you're not well educated, and you can't speak in public. You haven't much money or strength. But what, after all, does it matter how limited your resources are? In God's hands, they mean the final defeat of the enemy. Now, don't you see how modern Gideon's story is? Not much confidence in himself, not much faith in God, not much human help, not many resources, but the end result is what is important. And when the narrative ends at the end of chapter 7, you see Gideon has led the victory over the enemy. Honor has come to him. Peace has come to the whole land for the 40 years he lives. And it wasn't by chance, nor by luck, nor by coincidence. There were some vital essentials that were needed to make it work that way. You don't turn from being a loser into a winner without any effort. You don't turn from being a coward into a brave person without meeting some requirements. What Gideon needed, had to have, in fact, we must have also. Gideon needed assurance and reassurance. God had to keep talking faith into him, helping him, encouraging him, proving himself to him. And we have to have the same thing. Most of us can believe God will help the Pope, the pastor, or the preacher, or some saintly person we know. But me? A young woman came to her pastor with a question, "How can I believe that God is interested in what happens to me?" And he answered, "Look at your fingerprints. There are billions of fingertips in the world, but no others are like yours. Even such a small detail has had the special attention of God." Just as we need the constant assurance of parents, our significant other, husband or wife, that we're loved, so we need the reassurance of God that we're not lost in the crowd. And guess what? One of the ways we can receive that reassurance is through the sacraments of baptism and the Lord's Supper. As it says in the Presbyterian Book of Order, through these means of grace, God imparts and sustains our faith, orders our common life, and transforms the world. Therefore, I invite you this day to come to the table where you can receive the assurance we all need, the assurance of God's love.